Welcome everyone to the Carnegie Moscow Center podcast. My name is Alexander Gabuyev. I'm a senior fellow and a host. And today, in a pretty freezing day in Moscow, we're going to talk about a really hot topic, which is the European energy crunch and what's Gazprom and the Kremlin are up to. I'm happy to join by two leading experts on the issue. Katya Efimova, who is Senior Research Fellow with the Oxford Energy Institute. Welcome, Katya.
Hello.
And we are happy to have Sergei Kapitonov, who is a gas analyst at the Energy Center with the Skolkovo Management School. Welcome, Sergei.
Thank you so much, Alexander.
Let's start with the kind of hottest, probably, topic. I opened the FT today and I see that the decision of the Germany energy regulator, the Bundesnetzwerkagentur, to suspend the technical certification process for Nord Stream 2 has made the prices for natural gas in UK and in some European hubs again climb by steep 15%. Katya, what's going on? Like, you've written one of the best explainers on the approval process. So is that a technicality? Is it political? And how impactful is the decision of the German regulator?
Well, that's true. That's big news yesterday about the German regulator, Benetza, suspending a certification process. That's a regulatory certification process, which was meant to confirm that the operator of Nord Stream 2 pipeline complies with the European Gas Directive requirements. So that was a big surprise for a lot of people. And as you said, prices are up very sharply. So clearly the market is disappointed about it. And that really shows just how important the perception of Nord Stream 2 coming online is. And and if you look back at a few weeks and months, any kind of positive news about Nord Stream 2 potentially going ahead always calmed the market. All the negative news, which spell more delays, they have the opposite impact. They just cause prices up. Whether it's just technical issue, procedural issue, or political, I mean the suspension of the process, I think it's a little bit of both. That's my kind of first day assessment of that. So what the regulator really said, it's under law, it had 4 months to consider the application. And that 4 months was supposed to be counted from the 8th of September. So sort of early January was supposed to be draft certification decision, and the commission would have two and potentially another 2 or 4 months altogether for opinion. And then Benetza would have 2 more months to issue final certification decision, just to give you a timeline that was expected. So Benetza actually sort of broke that timeline. It put a suspense on this. It has already used about, 2.5 months considering that the process. And now what it has required effectively Nord Stream 2 to do, it basically said that in order to be certified, an operator would have to be a company registered under German laws. So it has to be, and at present, Nord Stream 2 is registered under Swiss laws. And once that process is completed, once Nord Stream 2 sets up this German subsidiary, etc., then that suspension will be lifted, and Benetza will resume the process, and it will it's allowed to use the remainder of this 4 months period. So it's about nearly 2 months. So in my view, from what I understand, it takes about a couple of months to establish this new subsidiary. So you could expect potentially the process to slip by a couple of months, and all in all, we would look into a final certification decision sort of around summer. And if you believe that no Nord Stream 2 flows will be allowed by Nord Stream 2, while this process is ongoing. That really spells, you know, there is no extra gas, at least via Nord Stream 2, and no extra Russian gas via Nord Stream 2 into Europe, which spells sort of a winter, the whole winter of high prices. So it's no really surprise my market reacted the way it did. So on one front, it's a technicality, because Benetze clearly interprets the law in such a way that it's got to be a German subsidiary. And, you know, on the other hand, if that's the case, you know, is a good question why Benetze accepted Nord Stream 2 certification request in September. It said all the documents were received. If it knew that the subsidiary will have to be German-based rather than Swiss-based. And, you know, it kind of looks as if, you know, Benetze has started this process, but it also sort of allowed itself an inbuilt option to suspend this process anytime at its convenience, effectively. And whether the timing when it decided to suspend it, whether it's coincidental, whether it's partly political, that is really a big open question. But ultimately, what it means for us people looking at gas markets, what it means for gas, that sort of means more uncertainty about how tight the gas balance is going to be in Europe.
Just to clarify, Katya, without the certification process completed and then the approval of the European Commission and probably the court cases that might be brought up by Naftogaz, no flows on Nord Stream 2 will happen? Or is there a way to ensure that the gas is flowing while the regulatory process is still ongoing?
Well, normally certification is considered complete and effective once all the stages have been passed, such as Benetze's draft, Commission's opinion, and Benetze's final decision. Commission only has a consultative role, really. It can't really tell Benetze in that case what to do. And normally no flows would go via pipeline as long as it's not certified fully. And if flows just start going via the pipeline, Benetze has a right to impose fines in that case. That's, as I understand it, administrative offense under German law. And in my view, you know, if you imagine a scenario when it's a particularly cold winter, an unusually cold winter, if the storages are running low, and they are low, they've been filled up at a low phase, then you can envisage a scenario when at a certain point the energy balance, the gas balance, is going to look so precarious in Europe that the regulator, on balance of weighing different risks, may allow flows via the pipeline. Because the important point to stress here, that actually from a technical point of view, the pipeline is absolutely fine. It has been certified from a technical point of view, from the point of view of pipeline integrity. So put it simply, if you start flowing gas via the pipeline, it's not going to be any kind of technical disaster. You know, it can flow gas safely towards Europe. And there you have this brand new kit with two pipelines sort of ready to start flowing gas. And if you see the situation in Europe very, very precarious later in winter, you may think that it's possible to give such a permission. But that's, again, that's a lot of ifs and buts, etc.
So, Sergey, let me turn to you to just briefly explain the logic of Gazprom. If I remember correctly, in October, Vladimir Putin said, no, Russia doesn't use energy as a weapon. We're not trying to put pressure on the Europeans to get Nord Stream 2 approval. But by the way, if Nord Stream 2 is approved today, the gas will flow tomorrow. If it is approved yesterday, we're ready to pump gas today. So it shows that there is additional volume of gas that Gazprom is ready to pump. Gazprom has justified its meeting contractual obligation but not shipping extra volumes by the need to fill storages at home, which sounds like legitimate reason to delay the additional shipments. But now we started to see like some small inflow of additional gas like a week back around November 8, November 9. So is it a strategy? Is it coincidence of various factors? what is Gazprom trying to achieve?
Well, that's how I call it. Gazprom is pursuing a kind of a risky game this year, but this risky game hasn't been specifically designed by Gazprom. I see that Gazprom was a lucky person out of the combination of factors that led to these skyrocketing gas prices in Europe. And amid this market situation, Gazprom has simply decided not to provide more gas to Europe beyond their contractual obligations and their meeting them that you have already mentioned. And this situation is different, for example, to the situation in 2014 and 15 when Gazprom was somehow trying to fight the Ukrainian reverse flows and was not meeting contractual obligations. This year, from the legal perspective, Gazprom is absolutely secured. On the other hand, Gazprom can possibly play a role of a good cop, providing more volumes to Europe, but they definitely can't do it on the spot. They can do it the other day after the decision is taken, because they probably do have enough resources, not only on the Yamal Peninsula, when they have when the Bavanenko gas field has reached its plateau level this year, but on the Bavanenko they can also extract more by 15 BCM, more than 115 BCM from the deeper layers, and they are now moving north from Bavanenko to the Kruzins, to the Kharasave and then to the Kruzinstern gas fields. On the other hand, their legacy gas fields in Nadimportas reducing their production volumes. From what Mr. Miller has said, Gazprom has some 100 BCM of extra capacity, but that doesn't necessarily mean that this capacity can be used tomorrow when they see that the demand is growing in Europe. What I see that Gazprom does need some predictable and long-term relations with the European consumers. For example, when the first Nord Stream project was implemented, Gazprom assigned new contracts for some 20 BCM of new Russian gas to Western Europe. These days, with the Nord Stream 2 saga, they haven't signed any new contracts. They probably do need some long-term guarantees for that their investment, that their time they spent to utilize these idle production capacities and this idle infrastructure has been spent properly, and that they can repay the investment into this new capacity. So, in my view, if there is a need from Europe for new long term contracts, we can see more Russian gas in Europe. But this is a long term game. From the tactics of this year, I don't think that Gazprom will somehow change its behavior. We see a minor increase in Gazprom's flows to Europe, primarily to inject into the storage in Germany and in Austria. But this minor increase isn't the thing that can somehow completely change the whole picture, and the prices are at the historically high levels at the moment. So I don't think that Gazprom is going to somehow ease the tension on the market just from their goodwill.
But wouldn't the additional volumes bring additional cash into Gazprom coffers? If it's time to earn money on the European gas market, it's probably now. Or the share of the spot in the formula is just too low, and there's probably technical lag of a couple of months, so the current spike in the prices will be reflected in the money that Gazprom is actually getting from the customers sometime later, and that's why Gazprom is not willing to pump more gas now. What's the logic here? Because I think that's the argument I hear a lot, saying, hey, if Gazprom is a commercial animal, it should be earning money like crazy when there is so much demand and that the prices are so high. Why is Gazprom not doing that?
I do agree with you that this is a high time to earn money in Europe. On the other hand, I do think that Gazprom can sacrifice a kind of upside in their revenues this year to more stable future for the years to come, because the whole gas game is a long game, and all these pipelines, the Turk Stream and the Nord Stream 2 pipelines, are designed for decades, and repayment of investments is planned also. It's no less than 7 years or 8 years. So probably Gazprom is not specifically pursuing this strategy of pressure. Gazprom was a lucky one to be in such a situation. But I don't think that the company is somehow interested now to, decrease this degree of pressure on the market, not in the pricing terms, but also in terms of the thirst for new gas, and this new gas, especially by the long-term contracts, maybe Russia's gas. And what we have learned from this gas crisis, that fully relying on the spot market is not a good strategy. The LNG hasn't come to Europe amid these skyrocketing prices. LNG flows mostly to Asia these days. And what does it mean that despite the huge capacity of regasification terminals in Europe, Europe can't rely on the spot market? Europe does need a new long-term relationship, be it Russia or be it the United States. And in this game, as I already said, Gazprom may be in advantage making Europe to sign something new with Russia.
Katya, do we know how much spot price is reflected in Gazprom's European contract? Is it a public information, or it varies from country to country and from customer to customer?
Well, the information that's been presented in various Gazprom's reports in public disclosure that is a very significant share of Gazprom's European contracts is hard prices, not just spot, but also, you know, prompt and prices for the period of months, for example. So it is also a lag. So there is a high share of hub prices, which is why Gazprom has also been making good money this year, because the hub prices fit through into the contracts as well. And that, of course, compared to the previous year, which wasn't a very good year for Gazprom, to put it mildly. So it's kind of compensating now in it. But I agree with Sergei that really Gazprom has found itself in that situation where it's beneficial for it, and it's benefiting from its gas sales, but it has not abused anything. It has not manipulated anything, in my view. It just found itself in a good situation, and it has enjoyed it, you know, from financial point of view. But also in terms of adding extra gas, I think the crucial point here, at least it has been so far, that actually if you look at Gazprom's production, it's been very high. And the reason, in my view, why until recently we haven't seen additional flows into Europe was just Gazprom was really pumping into domestic storages at high rate. And I understand this season has just been finished by 7th or 8th of November. So to me, what we saw is reduced flows in late August and September. That was actually due to the lack of available surplus gas to send into Europe to refill storages in Gazprom storages in Europe, because Gazprom had to do it first at home, so to speak, in Russia. It's like airline principle, fit your own mask and then help others, really. So it's kind of sensible, pragmatic behavior. And if that theory is correct, and I think it's sort of starting to be evident that it is, because as you've mentioned earlier on, as of 8th or 9th of November, we see sort of, you know, slowly increasing flows into Europe to feed storages. So I would interpret it as the gas which has now been freed up. So Gazprom no longer needs it for domestic storages, and that's finding its way into Europe. The question about infrastructure is really, you know, this gas could come via existing routes, which is, you know, Nord Stream 1, TurkStream, Yamal Europe, and Ukraine. But also, if at certain point there is a sufficient amount of gas to flow also via Nord Stream 2, once, you know, if and when it is cleared, then, of course, that would pacify the market, because it would be on a daily basis, but it also would create a perception within the market that, you know, there's now those new gas fields, they're connected by the new gas pipelines, and everyone feels a lot more relaxed that gas will come in when and if, you know, as needed into winter. With this kind of suspense now, again, that's a big question mark.
But we're probably not talking this winter for the reasons we discussed with the Nord Stream 2 approval process. So the additional gas might flow through Ukraine beyond the 40 BCM a year capacity that is envisaged in the contract. I don't know how much spare capacity there is in Yamal pipeline, particularly given the threat of President Alexander Lukashenko of Belarus to cut the transit. I think that one interesting question here is the share of hub price reflected in the price formula. I remember that was a hot button issue just a couple of years back, with Polish gas company pushing to have more hub price reflected. And I think that this time around, they wanted to go back to the price tied to the oil product. Is that correct? So do we have an understanding and the feeling in the market of whether the market is okay to say, yeah, hub prices are nice when they're low, but sometimes they are high because of this circumstances that are created by various market conditions like this year. And we had to bear with that because that's how this pricing mechanism works. Or is there a debate to go to kind of more oil connected pricing formula to have a more balanced solution?
Well, I think that if you look at the European gas market and you kind of track to balance of how much Europeans are benefited from the period when the hub prices resulted in lower, lower than prices than had they been connected to oil for many years. And if you compare it with this year, that on balance, the European market has benefited a lot from hub-based prices. That's one point. So I don't think they will likely sort of rush back to ask for a predominant oil indexation. And also just sort of an economic, you know, point is, you know, hub prices, they effectively reflect supply and demand of gas as a commodity. So it's logical that the price of gas as a commodity is, you know, established by supply and demand for gas rather than supply and demand for oil. And that, of course, that's a long argument, and that goes back, when oil and gas were sort of replaceable, because oil was a lot used for power generation in the past. It's no longer the case in most of European countries. But also to note about, you know, particularly Central and Eastern European countries, which for a long time, you know, they had contracts predominantly indexed to oil, and they were paying more than they would be paying had it been hub-based, and they fought for years. But then, you know, you had this inquiry and Digicomp investigation into Gazprom, which concluded peacefully with commitments, you know, Gazprom made certain commitments, etc. So now it's impossible for Gazprom to sell gas anywhere in the European Union, pretty much at a price which would be, you know, diverging from whatever level is on the hub. And, you know, so that's really what it is now. It just so happened this season, and it's pretty much unprecedented that, you know, oil prices, oil indexation now would have been resulted in a lot lower prices. But having said that, of course, countries, particularly countries with weaker economies, they might want to have, you know, certain degree, you know, of both. And we witnessed that with the Moldova contract, which understood to have 70% oil indexation, 30% gas indexation. And now what's upcoming is negotiation over the Serbian gas contract and how that will go. And it's also supposed to be on a longer term basis. You know, Moldova is for 5 years, Serbians talk about 10 years, I think. And then there have also been news of negotiations between Gazprom and Germans on a new supply. But I mean, so another point actually to add here is would be energy transition, green transition. And for European countries, which, you know, now prioritize this green transition very much, the question is, you know, how willing they will be to conclude long-term contracts. And again, what do you think long-term? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? Because in the old days, they were like 20-plus year contracts. And for countries which, you know, put less priority on this green transition and higher priority on physical security, like, for example, Turkey, that might be more... you know, palatable to have, preferable, in fact, to have a longer term deal. And of course, the final point, you know, the current energy crunch, the kind of pushing people to, you know, revisit and revalue their priorities about physical security, price security, green transition, etc. And they put different values on those things. And I think depending on how long the energy crisis is ongoing, how severe it's going to be next winter, will potentially have very significant implications for gas in European, particularly European balances. And it's not just about Gazprom, it's not just about Russian gas, it's for gas in Europe and globally.
That's a perfect summary for the potential impact of the energy crunch for the European gas market going forward. Sergey, finally, I'm turning over to you to ask, what would be Gazprom's likely reaction to the transition that's visible, because the energy crunch is partially a result of the energy transition globally. And it's not only Europe, but it's China. And many factors here are interrelated. So higher demand for gas born out of post-COVID recovery and some weather elements and others sending the prices to the trajectory where they are. That's definitely having the repercussions for the European market. But what would be Gazprom's response to this very serious dynamics in the European gas market in like 10 years time frame? What's the Gazprom options available? Is it more gas to China? Is it hydrogen? What are the options on the table?
Well, I'll divide this question into two parts. First, what is Russia's take on the whole future of natural gas? And in my view, the answer is clear. It's LNG that is flexible, that can move to every part of the world, primarily to Asia's markets. And the LNG that the history of the last couple of years shows can be green in accounting terms, of course, but the carbon footprint of LNG can be compensated using different trading schemes. The carbon credits can be bought on the market terms, and the consumers that are willing to pay more to show that they are buying clean LNG with no, in accounting terms, carbon, they do it, and there are a lot of carbon and free cargoes traded at the moment on the markets, and three cargoes have already been exported from Russia's projects. So LNG and in the future this so-called carbon-free LNG with the either it can be compensated or real measures to to reduce the carbon footprint of LNG can be used. And this LNG can be also in demand in Europe, especially in the markets like Spain or Portugal. What Gazprom will be doing is a bit more complicated thing because Gazprom, of course, is more conservative. Gazprom, a couple of years ago, Gazprom demonstrated in their strategy that the strategy will be based on three new chains. This is first natural gas, then methane hydrogen mixtures for the next, let's say, 5 years, and in the future after 2030, they can supply pure hydrogen to Europe. But the problem here is in the acceptance of this blue hydrogen or turquoise hydrogen, which is promoting the hydrogen which is which can be produced using the methane pyrolysis technology with no CO2 emissions, but with only with carbon black as a side product. This is a technology that Gazprom is now testing in a lab. But, this is a lab technology, and there are no commercial practice of using this technology. So far, Gazprom has invited German partners to further elaborate on this technology, but there are no real pilot projects yet. And the thing is, on the acceptance of this hydrogen in Europe, because the current European discussion is based on the green hydrogen on their own domestic renewable capacities that can produce this green hydrogen, let's say, in 20 years perspective. But what I see now is that both Europe and Gazprom can be in the same boat because, well, this energy, this gas crisis has shown a lot, has taught us a lot of lessons from the necessity of long-term predictable relations to inability of renewables to save Europe in times of the energy crunches. And it all means that the period, this transition period, may be a bit longer than it was previously expected, and that gas also from Russia can be in demand in Europe for a bit longer than it was expected. Because before, most analysts said that after 2030, the reduction of Russia's gas flows to Europe will be dramatic. This is now not that vivid.
This is really fascinating. As I sit here in Moscow in mid-November, I'm happy that Gazprom has put the mask on its face first. Probably. I know that it doesn't make life in Europe easier. But I hope that this crunch will be resumed sooner rather than later. And the dynamics and the changes that it brings to the market are extraordinary, with a lot of implications for both the gas industry, the energy market, and Russian politics. So we definitely should reconvene once the madness is over sometime next year. I thank you very much, Katya and Sergey, and looking forward to host you again and to read your stuff. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.